right. So hi, and welcome to Scope It Out, the official podcast of the International Forum of Allergy and Rhinology. I'm your host today, Dr. Amber Luong from the McGovern Medical School of the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. Today, I've invited Dr. Amin Javer from the St. Paul Sinus Center at the University of British Columbia to discuss his manuscript entitled Sinonasal Microbiota Transfer to Treat Recalcitrant Chronic Rhinosinusitis, a case series, from August issue of IFAR. So welcome, Amin. I hope you're doing well this summer.
Yes, thank you for having me, Amber.
Yes. How's the weather these days? Is it warm even up there, or is it just perfect?
It was warm for about 5 or 6 weeks, but now it's around 20 to 25 degrees Celsius, which is just perfect.
Excellent. Well, very jealous, because it's definitely not perfect here in Houston.
It's only boiling over there.
Yeah. It's a little bit warm, warm and a little bit humid. Yeah. All right. So before we get started discussing this really interesting manuscript, I wanted to kind of give our readers a little bit of a brief description of your rhinology practice to sort of put everything in context. Do you mind doing that for us?
No, not at all, Amber. Thank you. So we have very strong 100% rhinology practice with a lot of research going on. We have two research assistants, several fellows and residents, medical students, and it's 100% rhinology. We don't do anything else. And we do run several research projects at one time and publish in several different areas. But one area of significant interest to me has always been the non-type 2 patient that does not get better. And that is something that is really grabbed my attention for many years. And I've sort of folded it along with people making sort of probiotic rinses and probiotics and things like that for the sinuses. And, with all the stuff that's come out over the last few years, one of the things that has come to, realization for us is that we don't actually have like a clear causative organism, like a keystone species that makes our patients sick. There's not like an H. pylori for ulcers. Like, we don't have that
right
in our world. And that really bothered me, because I was thinking, this is such a complex environment for the microbiome. And how, once it goes awry, how do we bring it back in shape? And, to my experience, I don't know what your experience is, the probiotic rinses were not, great. In these kinds of patients, the Pulmicort rinses don't really do a whole lot. They're not the polypoid patients. So it's not like that kind of an inflammatory thing. It's more of that thick, sticky mucus that just coats the sinuses. And we sort of just shrug our shoulders and say, we've sort of given up. We've done everything. Like, yeah. Sort of stripping the mucous membrane, we've got nothing else left to provide for these patients, right? Yeah, I think I sort of started dwelling into this a while back with photodynamic therapy. And, the Ondine Pharmaceuticals lives in Vancouver, and their offices are right here, their head office is here. And so I started working with them.
Okay.
And, Carolyn, the CEO, is a good friend. And we tried to sterilize the sinuses with APDT, the antifocal photodynamic therapy. And we had sort of okay success, The problem was that we were sort of sterilizing the sinuses and then we were just leaving them alone. So there was a risk that the sinuses were going to get even worse, over time, because then you were just leaving them open to whatever came in next. And so then we started investigating, started thinking about doing a mucosal transplant, but we wanted to do it in a very controlled manner. We really wanted to find a way to get mucus out of healthy patients and put it in sick sinuses. And to do that seemed like a simple idea, but it was very difficult to get all the approvals and Health Canada approval.
Yeah.
It had to go through years of write-ups and approvals. And we finally got approved for this, but it's, we wanted to do like metagenomics and all sorts of, cytokine studies on these patients. And we wanted to learn how to store mucus and all the kinds of stuff. So it took us a while to get all our eggs in a row and stuff.
Yeah.
So we finally managed to get some funding for it after we published this paper that just got published in IFAR. And that was just sort of a, small group of 9 patients that we did, right?
Well, and before you jump right into that, and thank you so much for that background, because that does really help to kind of see where the interest and where this all sort of the etiology, your interest in the subject matter, you know, similar to you, you know, I agree with you. That's a really difficult cohort, especially now with the biologics. It's highlighting how difficult this group of patients is for managing. I chose it because, you know, it was just a year ago during an ARS meeting, I was asked to participate in a panel that said, you know, what are some possible practice changing treatment options for chronic rhinosinusitis? And there was another group that was looking into kind of a similar idea, and we'll touch a little bit into that too. So I'm really excited to hear, and that's when I saw your manuscript, although it's relatively small, I was excited to hear kind of the insights of your study. So given that, let's jump into that. Can you highlight some of the methodology of this study? You mentioned you started out with the 9 patients. So how did you divide them?
Right. So when we went to Health Canada and to CIHR, which is a funding agency, a fund granting agency, they sort of said, well, show us the goods, like show us some, see if there's a signal somewhere. And we thought, okay, let's do a small group where it's not blinded. It's an open trial study where we know what they're getting, they know what they're getting. So we took 9 of our worst patients and divided them into 3 groups. Basically, one group got just the transplant.
Okay.
One group got just the light therapy, the antimicrobial photodynamic therapy, which is basically a 670 nanometer light therapy to their sinuses. And then the other group, which was I thought would work the best, was do the blue light therapy, sterilize the sinuses, and then put an implant in them, right?
Okay.
Put a transplant in them. So if you sterilize the sinuses, then there's nothing bad in there. And then you put good bugs in there. And by just basic thinking, those patients should do the best. And so we followed them with endoscopic scores, with SNOT22 scores, and then we did metagenomics on them.
Okay. Now, before you tell us the data and highlight the data that from the study, so the antimicrobial photodynamic therapy you sort of brought up, you had some experience with that. Do you have any like background data so you confirm that when you give them this therapy that it is completely sterile, or is there a particular bacteria that sort of still resides, but it's considered a non-disease-causing bacteria? What was left? What data do we have about that therapy?
Excellent question. The only answer I can give you is that we have very little in vivo data. We have in vitro data, and that shows that 99.9% of all bacteria get killed if you do this in the lab in an in vitro manner. And so in vivo data, we have almost none. So we had done several patients with this, and we found that their sinuses, in fact, I have great data to show that the sinuses will completely clear up when they've been diseased for years, but nothing has been published on it. There's never been a proper trial or a study on it. And so this was just literally our experience and some data from the lab, and that's all we had. And so that's it. That was the background on that front. And the problem with that blue light therapy is, you know, it takes a bit of work. You have to paint the sinuses with some sort of a dye. We use methylene blue because it has to attach to the walls of the bacteria. Then you put the balloon in, which is not always easy to put in the right place.
Okay.
Then you expand the balloon with saline. So it's like having a light bulb inside the sinuses. And then you basically turn on the light, which is a 670 nanometer laser. And it shines on all that bacteria and mucous membrane. And it sort of just kills them, basically, without damaging any of the regular mucous membrane, because the methylene blue that's attached to the walls of the bacteria is actually what activates their death. And so you end up with a completely sterile sinus.
And you were able to show that you did before and after treatment and did cultures or swabs or microgenomics or something.
Yes, correct. And we also had patients who completely cleared up, so we could see that endoscopically and we could see that in the lab. But there was no real study that was a big study that was done on this. So that was our data, our background data. And so we thought, okay, so if you kill all the bacteria in the sinuses and you put fresh, new, healthy bugs on it, you know, chances are these patients are going to do fantastic. So that was, that was the group that I was hoping would do the best. We were really surprised with what happened. So we took 9 very bad patients. They knew what they were getting. It was all open label. And basically, we were just doing this for CIHR, for our granting agency, to see, because they wanted to see data.
So some and sort of preliminary data for a future study. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. They said, we're not going to fund you until we see that there's something here, you know, in the first place. So we did, you know, three patients went into the SNMT group. I think two patients went into the pure APDT group.
Okay.
And four patients went into the APDT SNMT group. So four patients got the blue light treatment and then followed by the microbial transplant.
Okay.
Three patients got the transplant by itself and two patients got the PDT by itself.
Okay.
So it's a small group, nicely balanced, right?
Okay.
And we followed them very carefully. And we were very surprised at the results, as you'll see in the manuscript. I mean, the SNMT patients did far better than everybody else. So the patients all we did is we got them in the chair, we flushed out their sinuses with some saline, plain old saline, just cleaned out as much of the junk as we could and sucked out all the junk that we could find. And then we just took mucus from a healthy donor, usually would be their son or daughter or sister or something, and then we put it in there. And that's it. That's all that got done. And that happened twice. We did that twice, you know, with a week interval between the two treatments. And that's it. And then we just washed them.
How did you come up with that methodology? Like, why did you just decide on that?
The question was, how do we get mucus, number one,
okay.
And how do we transplant it? And how do we get it ready? So we put the donor in one room and the recipient in the other room. And the donor... Basically, what we did is we gave them some capsaicin spray and some Otrivin, and we only did that just to make their nose run a lot and to open their middle meat and stuff, because most of these patients were very healthy, like 18, 20, 25-year-olds who had never had sinus disease. They were healthy.
Got it.
And so then we would let them do that for 10 minutes, and then we would scope them and suction out all the mucus from the middle meat. Now, if they had an accessory ostium, then we would inject some sterile saline into the maxillary sinus, leave it there for 5 or 10 minutes, and then suck it back out.
Okay.
If they didn't have an accessory ostium, we would just suck out whatever we could get from the middle meatus. So generally, we wanted about 5 to 10 mLs of transplant. And if there was no accessory ostium, that was very hard to get 5 or 10 cc's of transplant. Maybe like 1 or 2 cc's. So giving them capsaicin really helps. So that really increased the production of mucus. And then what we did is if we couldn't get enough, we would wash the middle meatus with a little bit of saline, sterile saline. So there would be two surgeons, like my fellow and myself, and he would put some saline in the middle meatus. And immediately at the same time, I would suck it out from the bottom. So as it would drip along the middle meatus, I would just keep sucking it up.
Okay.
Until we had between 5 and 10 mLs.
Okay.
And then we would spin this down and get the sort of the thick supernatant, like the real mucus. And then we would then... just basically dump that into the recipient's sinus, the infected sinus.
And the maxillary sinus then? Or
whichever sinus was involved. So if it was maxillary, then that would be easy because then you could do it just sitting. But if, let's say, it was the frontal or the sphenoid, then we would put the patient in a dependent position. And put the mucus transplant in there, and we would leave it there for, they would lay there for 10 minutes.
Okay.
So we really wanted it to take, you know, and then we would tell them not to rinse their sinuses out, do nothing to them for at least 5 days.
5 days. Okay.
So we wanted that to really take, you know, and that's all they did. And the most interesting part was the first patient we did, we would do phone call appointment, like just follow-ups. And in the first week, the patient was like, I feel terrible. This is the worst thing you've done. I'm sick. And then we're like, oh my God, we got them much worse, you know? And then the second and third week, they got better and better and better. And over 12 weeks, they like completely cleared up.
Okay.
And we followed these patients, you know, I think out of 24 weeks, and they completely cleared up. And we were like, wow, that's incredible. So 2 out of the 3 patients with SNMT, literally, they were patients of mine for over 10 years.
Uh-huh.
I haven't seen them for the last 2.5 years. They've disappeared because they're just completely healthy. I just get a Christmas card and I get a big bouquet of flowers every Christmas saying thank you. One patient cleared up completely and then got worse again in the SNMT group. The other two groups where we did the blue light therapy, they didn't do as well. So the patient with the blue light therapy got better for a short time, for a few weeks, and then they slowly got worse again. And so they just went back to their baseline. The patients who got the blue light and then followed by the SNMT actually did better, but not as well as the patients who just got the SNMT by itself. So the SNMT by itself group really was shining. compared to the other two groups.
Well, you mentioned the word better, and I know that when you first started out, there were several primary endpoints.
Yes.
The one was by symptoms, and the other one was like an endoscopic scoring, goals, yes. and then genomics. What do you mean by better? So, like endoscopically, they both looked better, and then symptoms-wise correlated with that, or tell me a little bit
more. So for the SNMT group, the two patients who got better felt better. So there's not 22 scores dropped significantly.
Okay.
And the endoscopic scores dropped significantly.
So it correlated too.
Correlated completely. The one patient who, their endoscopic scores and their SNOT 22 is correlated really well. So the patient who got better and then got slightly worse again, it correlated again. So it matched. The APDT group really, I felt like APDT, the problem was it was hard to do in the first place. So patients, a lot of them had to go through a bunch of discomfort and that created problems. Like, you know, in one patient, the balloon sort of got stuck in the sinus and was hard to get out and the patient was sort of traumatized. And so those were little like technical issues that we had to deal with. And it wasn't as easy to do. But in my mind, we were sterilizing their sinuses. So, you know, if you just think about it, they should do better overall.
But right.
And the APDT group by themselves, I didn't expect them to do as well because once you sterilize the sinuses, who knows what finds its way back in there, right? So, and that's been my experience with APDT on its own in the past. I think one of the issues with APDT is, you know, the catheters are not made to be used very easily in the sinuses. So you really need to be very good technically or an awake patient in your office to do that.
I see. So you did talk about the microbiome and that you looked at it. And then in the paper, it was a very brief like synopsis that said there was no major differences. I mean, maybe can you share with us a little bit more detail or really like, you know, what kind of data did you collect and you saw no changes even with the transplant patients in their microbiome?
Yeah. So the microbiome composition, We followed it at every visit. So we looked at the microbiome at every visit. And, you know, we expected there to be a shift. What we found was that in the patients who just got the microbial transplant, we found that the microbiome became unstable. So it changed, but it didn't change in any way, at least to this stage where we have done the study. We didn't find it moved in a direction towards the donor's microbiome. It just went sort of a bit haywire. Like it went all over the place. You know, one week we would grow this and the next time we would grow that. And it was all over the place. Whereas the other two groups where we did the APDT, it didn't become unstable. It stayed approximately the same. So the biggest change we saw was in the group that was just the transplant, where we just flushed their sinuses out and put a transplant. That's where we sort of saw like a bit of a jarring effect, you know, like as if it was like hit, and then it just sort of stayed unstable until it eventually just stabilized. But the other two groups didn't really show a major change. So once they had the APDT, they didn't really change that much.
Did you look at some of these parameters like alpha diversity and beta diversity?
Yes.
Were there changes in like diversity levels for, you know, with the transplant? You would expect that it'd be maybe become more diverse.
So it didn't. That was a crazy part. In the beta diversity study, we found that there was really no significant clustering between the donor and the recipient, which was very surprising because we thought that that there would be a bit of clustering happening over time. Even in the patients who got well, it didn't. So it almost appeared like the patients who got better created a brand new healthy microbiome, which did not match the microbiome of the donor.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting.
Which was very interesting to us. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, about a year ago, that, you know, as I mentioned in the background, the reason why your study was really fascinating to me was because I came across the study by Dr. Servin's group in Sweden. And they looked at the upper airway microbiome transplantation in chronic rhinosinusitis. Their protocol was very different. They did antibiotics to sort of not really sterilize, but to kind of get rid of maybe the dominant bacteria for 13 days. And then they treated patients for 5 days consecutively with a transplant from a healthy donor. And their results were, I mean, they had, I think, 33 patients, so a much bigger. So, you know, who knows if there was differences. But, you know, There was, first of all, what would you say about their methodology compared to yours? And then their results in general showed more consistent improvement in the transplant and the SNOT-22 scores and overall. Now, to be fair, I haven't seen any update of follow-up on that study. So any thoughts on how your study compares to their study in terms of methodology and also with your results?
Mm-hmm. Great question. Yeah. So that study was very interesting to us. And we were actually following their group even before the publication happened, because we were aware of them. We had met with them. And they, you know, there were some things that we were a bit concerned about. One was the collection of the transplant. So what they were doing is just rinsing the nose. The patient would just rinse the nose out and collect the mucus in the rinse, which is not what we were doing. So we were not collecting basically mucus from the nose. We were collecting mucus from the middle meatus. So that was the one biggest difference. The second difference was that they were just, I think they were, I'm not 100% sure, and you can correct me, but I think they were just looking at outcomes in terms of how the patients did. So they
were
SNOT-22s, and we were doing a lot more than that. We were doing endoscopic scoring, SNOT-22s, metagenomics, which I don't think they did. So I found that their study gave a really good signal. It told us that, yeah, maybe there is something here. Like, maybe this does work. But the big question was, how does it work? And can it work better if you use more sinus microbiota as opposed to nasal microbiota? Because we know that the microbiome differs. And so those are really the biggest differences. And we are now doing an 80-patient study. Mm-hmm. Because we now got funding from Health Canada. They were very happy with the outcomes, and they said, you know, we feel like there's a real signal here. And of course, we also showed them the data from Dr. Servin's study. And so now we are doing an 80 patient cohort, double blinded, placebo controlled, 40 patients in the SNMT group, 40 patients getting a placebo. And we're so excited because we are 60 patients in.
And
we've only got 20 more patients to go. And we've got 2 PhDs happening out of this study. You know, it's very, very exciting what we're doing. And I think I can't wait for those envelopes to open. Like, you know.
Yeah, that's very exciting. Yeah, you sort of alluded to it briefly in your discussion that you've launched this RCT. Is the methodology going to be more or less the same in terms of like 2 treatments separated by a week or 2 apart and then follow up about 30 days later?
Yeah, so it's different. It's much different. So it's 2 treatments still, but they're 1 day apart.
1 day apart, okay.
1 day apart, because we really felt like you needed to hit the sinus hard with this new bugs. And so, and of course, there is no waiting time because there's no APDT. The waiting was because of the APDT. So that's out of the question. We're not doing any APDT. It's just SNMT versus no SNMT. So basically, we're screening the patients really well. They stop all their antibiotics, they get no pre-treatment. That was the other difference, is the Servin study used antibiotics.
Right.
We didn't, because we really want to keep the antibiotics out of the equation. And all we do is flush their sinuses out with saline. That's all we do. So we clean the sinus that's diseased really well as we can. And we're also doing a study where we're going to show whether there's a change in microbiome simply from flushing. Like, that's another study that's going to come out of this study. There's so many different studies that are going to come out from this study, because we are also looking at storage of microbiome, and we want to learn so much about storage. Like, is it viable? You know, if you keep the microbiome in a fridge, is it viable after a week or after 6 weeks or after 6 months? So that's another study that's happening in the background. So there's several other studies that are going to come out of this one big study.
And so are these patients also washing as a background or using nasal steroids after treatment?
Right. So so once we do the 2 transplants, day 0 and day 1, then they do not do any rinses for at least 4 to 5 days.
Okay.
So we say 4 days, and then after that, they can start rinsing if they want, because we really want the microbiome to take, you know, to engage into the sinus. And then after that, they can rinse, and they can only rinse with saline and pulmicort. And the reason we use pulmicort is because it really shouldn't do anything to the microbiome, and it's anti-inflammatory. And it's basically standard of care for most people. Most of the sinus docs in the world is, you know, using some sort of a So we're leaving that alone. And then we're just basically seeing how these 80 patients will do. And so
that's
what happens.
Yeah,
and we're following them for six months.
And then is the primary outcome at 30 days or at the 6 months?
45 days. They're followed at 45, 90, and 180 days.
And what's your primary?
At 180 days.
At the 180 days?
At 180 days.
Okay, so at 6 months. Excellent.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we look forward to that. So you have 20 more to enroll, and then you're going to follow them for 6 months. So maybe another year before we kind of hear from you. Okay.
So we went back and asked to open the envelope at 44 patients, because the first 44 patients, because we've got two PhDs whose graduation depends on this. And so we had to open the envelope because they couldn't be here forever. They've been here for 4 years already.
Oh, great.
And so first 44 patients, the envelope has been opened, but only the two PhD students know the results. Like the investigators, myself and Amy, who is the research scientist, and I'm the clinical scientist, we do not have the results yet. So we are still blinded, and it's driving us crazy because we really want to know, and these PhD students already know the first 44 patients. So anyway, it is what it is, and we'll
patience, be patience. Yes. Yeah. No, that sounds very exciting. And I too am very excited to find out what you guys see and observe. Cause like I said, even a year ago when I saw Dr. Servin's work, and it makes a lot of sense to me. So I still think that this is a potential game changer, especially for that really difficult cohort now that's getting even more highlighted in our practice because of the role of biologics knocking out those other, used to be really difficult patient population. So I agree with you 100% that this is the very challenging group that still needs some treatment, better treatment options. Well, Amin, I really appreciate your time with me today and having explained some of the studies and the background, and really looking forward to your results in a year. So I'm sure maybe we'll talk again a year from now.
Yeah, looking forward to it. I can't wait to see what shows up when those envelopes open.
Great. All right, Amin. Well, enjoy your wonderful weather. I, on the other hand, will continue to enjoy my 100% humidity and 200 degree Fahrenheit weather.
Well, you're welcome to come visit us anytime, Amber. We'd love to show you around.
Sounds good. All right. I will see you in Miami, hopefully. Yes. And best of luck going forward. Yes. And thanks again. Bye-bye.
Thank you for having me. Take care. See you.
All right. Bye, Amin.
Bye. Take care, Amber.